If you've listened to the podcast before, or you've followed me for any length of time, you may have heard me say something like this. My first tip for standing out in a crowded niche is to create your own content. This is a hill that I will die on. Do not let someone else or something else create your content for you. And if you have, then today's episode is probably going to come as a shock. This is episode 137 of the Tiny Course Empire podcast, and today I've invited a special guest to talk to us. I first learned about him through a forum that he and I both belong to. We've had a little interaction there. I have watched some of his conversations over there, and he is known as the bottleneck guy. And what he does is useful to all of us who own businesses. He is a business consultant who helps corporations and even solopreneurs identify the places and the processes in their business where they are constrained, where they are not able to scale or grow because of some bottleneck that we often don't even recognize. Now, that alone is interesting enough, but that's not why I invited him to come on the podcast today. I invited him to come on the podcast today because he is also an author. He writes very engaging books about bottlenecks in business. And his latest book, which I read and which I absolutely loved, was written using AI. And we already know how I feel about that. And I know how some of you feel about that. So I was really excited when Clark Ching told me that he would come on the podcast and tell us all about the process that he used to write a really engaging, really useful, really informative book with the help of ChatGPT and Claude. So I hope that you will enjoy this conversation as well. As always, the show notes, the recommended resources, and contact information for Clark will be in the description below or at tinycourseempire.com/137. Don't forget to subscribe because that makes sure that every new episode lands in your inbox or in your podcast app of choice and you never miss anything. With that out of the way, let's get to our interview with Clark.
Welcome to the Tiny Course Empire podcast, a weekly show dedicated to helping you launch and grow your digital course business, even if you don't have a big team or a six-figure ads budget. We'll help you design smart systems, take consistent action, and achieve massive success on your own terms. Now, here's your host, Cindy Bedar.
Welcome, Clark. I am so excited to have you on the podcast today. The people who know me know that I love two things. I love systems in business, and I love to write. And I strongly dislike AI as a content creation machine.
Indeed.
Which is part of the reason why I invited you here. But we're going to get to that in a minute because I want to talk about how you're using AI because I'm super impressed with it. But first, I want my audience to know more about you and what you do because there's a lot of, let's call it synergy between what you do and kind of what I teach my audience as well in terms of systems and being more efficient at work, which is what drew me to you in the first place. Actually, my first introduction to you was through your book, The Bottleneck Rules. And I read that. I found it incredibly engaging, really entertaining and informative, which is hard to pull off. So I appreciate your writing style in that way. And I learned a lot through that book. And mostly I learned that, and this is not anything I didn't know, but you know, my biggest bottleneck stares back at me from the mirror every day, which is, you know, just the way it goes when you're a small business owner, I guess. But so tell me about what you do and who you work for and what this bottleneck guy persona is all about.
Right. Okay. So I'm Clark Cheng. I live in New Zealand. I grew up in New Zealand, but I moved away in my 20s to live in Scotland and Ireland. So I learned a few more vowels when I did that. And I came back here and tried to spread them around New Zealand, but they haven't really stuck. So living in Nelson, New Zealand, I'm in my mid-50s now. And for most of my early career, I was a computer scientist and then a programmer and all of that kind of stuff. And then in the mid-90s, I discovered a book I think is absolutely wonderful, and it changed my life, but it's very hard to recommend it these days because it's quite dated, which is a business novel called The Goal by Ellie Goldratt. And it's a full-blown novel. It's actually quite it's a very engaging but sometimes confusing read. And it teaches the idea of how to find bottlenecks in factories. So I became utterly enamored with bottlenecks. But it took me probably maybe 15 years before I realized I was actually quite good at that stuff. And I had transplanted a lot of the bottleneck thinking into two areas. One was software development, commercial software development, and that's my speciality. Though these days I don't work with teams, I work with leaders and executives, senior managers, who are often, when they wake up in the morning and they look in the mirror, they're actually the bottleneck of their organization. So I help those people. And the other area I help is that I loved the theory of constraints, which is the name of the bottleneck stuff. But j just so much of the stuff that came out about it was very sort of 1970s, 1980s scientifically written, and it became very, very hard for normal people to access it. It was very hard to say, hey, look, you probably have a problem, but you have to go and read this 400 and something page book from the 1980s. It just didn't work. So I've kind of, if I have a mission in life, it's to be simplified, to simplify and modernize Ellie Goldratt's work, which is why I've written my books. It just takes that I really have cherry-picked his work and just tried to simplify it so ordinary people can go out and speed up their businesses by finding the bottleneck. So that's my history.
I found the bottleneck rules to be very, very approachable, very understandable as a lay person. I didn't feel like I needed a background in manufacturing or anything like that. I have a background in manufacturing, but it didn't come into play. It wasn't a required a prerequisite for understanding the finer points of what you were trying to get at in that book, which is why I found it so fascinating. Like I said, it was so engaging. It reads like a novel. And it wasn't like one of those boring, business productivity books. Like you
Oh,
just
no.
drag through it, right? And you're just skimming over it because
Isn't it
it was
amazing
really
how much?
engaging. So
It's just so
I
much
enjoyed
easier
it.
to read, isn't it, when you read a
Yeah, so
story?
much easier to read.
It's harder to write a story.
Yeah.
It's much easier to sit down and go bang, 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 bullet points. There you go. That's everything I know. It's much harder to
Absolutely.
construct a story that does capture people and pull them in because it's interesting. But it pays off though, because if you write it once and thousands of people read it, it's a really, it's just a magnificent thing. I'm not sure how many books you've got, or audio books where you've maybe got the first two or three chapters read, and then you just go, oh, I can't do any more. But I know it would be good for me. It's like
Oh,
eating
yes.
vegetables.
There are so many books. I have a bookshelf sitting over here, and I have so many books on there that are partially read. Books that come highly recommended. Flow is one of them. I cannot get through that book to save my life.
Indeed.
It is so dense, and it makes me feel stupid to read it. because I'm just like, I don't get this. I've read the same page four times. I don't know what he's saying. I'm done.
And you know,
So
some people
your
have really
style of
embraced that.
writing was so beneficial.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I'm glad you like
So
that.
yeah. So what, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What were you saying
I was
about?
just going to say some people, you know, I used to go to conferences a lot for my work. And you go to conferences, and I remember sitting there thinking, I'm quite intelligent. And I just watched a keynote, but I didn't have a clue what that guy said. And everyone else was sitting there nodding and smiling. And I thought, I'm probably at least as intelligent as half of them, you know, statistically speaking. And I'm pretty sure that none of them, except maybe five people, knew it. And but you can't pretend to be, you feel dumb. You can't confess that. And yet I remember one guy in particular, he walked away and he was beaming, and everyone was nodding and feeling like they were all really stupid. And I don't think he meant to, achieve that. But he never got the signals back that he was actually just confusing people. And then you get some other people who do that deliberately so that you go spend a lot of
Well,
money with them.
right, because they need to make themselves feel smarter
I think that's
by making everyone in the room feel dumb. So,
indeed.
but your book made me feel smart because I
Excellent.
understood it and I enjoyed it and I thought, "Oh, yeah, this is amazing." Then I ran into you actually. I ran into you again in this book. Surprisingly,
Yes.
which is for people listening instead of watching the video, Simple Marketing for Smart People by Billy Broaz. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, and Tiago Forte. And I came across you the second time in this book. So we met, first of all, on the Mac Power Users Forum. That's where I ran into you. That's where I found out about your book, The Bottleneck Rules, and I tracked down your website. And got on your mailing list and downloaded it there. And then I ran into you the second time in that book. And I thought, that's a sign. And then you posted again on the Mac Power Users Forum, where we both hang out, about how you had written a new book. What's it called?
The Bottleneck Detective.
The Bottleneck Detective, which you were kind enough to send to me and which I read. It was fabulous again. But the reason why I wanted to get you on the podcast today is because you wrote that book with AI. And I want to talk about that.
Excellent.
Because I tell people all the time, don't write your content with AI. I don't want to read content you wrote with AI. I think you owe your readers better than that. And I've taken quite a stand on that. But I read your book, The Bottleneck Detective, and it is good. So I want to talk to you about how you used AI to write that.
Right.
Tell me all about it.
Okay. So I agree with you, or at least I did used to agree with you, that the beautiful thing about AI, if you're running a content farm, is that you don't have to hire people who live in poor countries to write you or rewrite you lots of low quality but high quantity content. So that's a beautiful thing. If you're just churning out loads and loads and loads of low quality content, suddenly you can get the little robot in your computer can write that for you, and you've just got to type into it, write me a thing about blah blah blah, go through, edit it ever so slightly, and then pop it on your web page, and then every single article you write will start with something like, in these busy times, when we're all, and they'll all, and they just go, you go, oh, and you can see it, and it just doesn't feel like it's written by a craftsperson who really loves what they're talking
Has
about.
no personality.
No. But then, on the other hand, that in a way, that's up to the game of a lot of people who can actually now write stuff that they couldn't before. But I don't think that. So I couldn't do that because I'm a. First of all, it just makes me a little bit of sick comes up at the back of my throat, when I think about it.
Me
But then
too.
I'm a professional writer now, and as you are, and so many of us are. I've written. I think I've got six books on Amazon now, and I've gone through 20 years, 25 years from being a really below average writer to learning to be a good writer. So when I'm doing using AI, I'm not going to let it tarnish my reputation. I'm not going to let it. I don't care about writing quantity. I want quality. So I'm taking the dial and I'm turning it up to high on quality. And that's probably the difference. I know how to write well now, but it took an awful long time to get to that point. And so when I'm using AI, I'm actually using it to make me a better, richer, more thoughtful, more well-rounded writer. And that requires an interaction between me, my fingertips, my brain, and at the moment, two AI platforms. So I use ChatGPT and I use Claude, and I will move between them. But I'm orchestrating everything that I write, and I'm doing a lot of fingertip work. That there's a lot of editing going on there, and a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. But then just sometimes ChatGPT does stuff that just it just lifts me up because it just does the things that I'm not good at. Now I'll give you a few examples.
Yes, please.
So with the bottleneck detective, I started kind of at the end of the writing. But the bottleneck detective, when I had written that, I took it and I sent it off. I looked and thought, I don't need to go and get an editor because I the way I wrote the book, I know it's good enough. And I actually had my daughter's she just finishing her criminology master's. So she edited it for me and provided me all the editorial feedback. And I got everything then. I go, that's good. So I updated everything. And then I passed it on to a proofreader and I paid her, I'm not sure, $300, $400. And she went through and she proofed it. And I've done that in the past. And she came back with, when I look at it, there were things like M dashes and stuff like that, which I never can get them, you know, getting the comma in the right place, making sure it's got consistent, all of that stuff that I can't do. But she did really hardly any editing on it. Most of what she did was actually a proof with a few little tweaks, because the quality of what I gave her, I had passed it through ChatGTP, and the writing was just really good. So I'd used it to make sure that the stuff that I wrote, I would just use I would to and fro between my editor, sorry, my text editor that I'm writing in, and ChatGTP or Claude, and I'll just use it to make sure that the writing was it was good writing. So that was a really interesting thing that for a proof she passed her eyes over it, made a few corrections, but they were I imagine it, there was maybe I would guess 1/50th. Oops, sorry, I've just put
Yeah,
a
it
thumbs
does
up
that
on
to
your
me
screen
all
by
the
accident.
time.
There was one, maybe 1/50th of the corrections needed from her. So that was really helpful. But you know, you could do that with Grammarly, and I'm not disciplined or skilled enough to do that myself, and I'm happy to pay for it. So the AI just produced better writing. So some of the other areas that were really interesting, and I'll step so the bottleneck detective. I started that. I said, right, I'll tell you what I didn't do. I didn't say, hey, ChatGTP, I want you to write me a book where it's about a bottleneck detective. And he's a young kid, let's say, and he goes off and solves bottlenecks. Go write the book. And then it churned out a book and I published it. I didn't do that. I went and said, hey, look, I really would like to write a really small book. And I'd like to base it on some books I think I read, a school teacher read to us in the 70s when I was a kid. And they were, and I looked it up and they were Encyclopedia Brown, which I think it was somehow that book made it to New Zealand. And so I said, I want to write a little story in the style of that because I'd like to teach people how to find bottlenecks. And by the way, the easiest way to find bottlenecks is to spot. A queue, so a queue of people waiting. So there's a lineup of people waiting. You look at that, and you can find a bottleneck. And then, and I said, you know, it's almost like if it was a detective novel, that would be the smoking gun. So that's all my thinking. I spit it into ChatGTP and it writes a little story for me. With that eventually, after hours and hours and hours of editing, became the first chapter in The Bottleneck Detective. So it was all my ideas, and I just started to sit and write a story. And it put things, it invented the name of the Starlight Cinema. I go, wow, I would never invented the name of the character, which I think I changed. But it just wrote this little story in the style of an encyclopedia, Brett Brown, or yeah, and it just did that. And then so I butchered and butchered and butchered that, with my editing with my fingertips, and I moved it around and I got the story to look at, that's a really good story. And then I let it rest for a while. And it had done something though that was really hard for me, which is to write the first draft. And what I was then doing, it wrote the first draft, and I went back and I edited and edited and edited it, until it was something that I felt like that's entirely me, and it's exactly what I wanted to say. And I think that's maybe where people, they might just take the first version of that, tweak it so slightly, and then publish it. And maybe that's okay. But for me, that wasn't. And from then, if for people who are thinking about, what comes next, it's like, well, I thought, actually, I really just want to write. I want to get myself more practice at actually writing and producing small pieces. So I set up a, I went to ConvertKit, and I set up an email course, and that first chapter became the first lesson. And I thought, okay. Do you know Jack Reacher books? Lee Child's Jack Reacher.
Big
Okay.
fan. Yeah.
So Lee Child's, when he was still writing them, he would write the first chapter and he would get that right. And then everything that came after that just happened. He didn't plot it all out. And so I did the same with this. I thought, okay, I'm going to do, I've done the first one. Now I need to do the second chapter. So I went back into ChatGTP, started completely fresh, pasted in my story and said, I want this, but now I want, the bottleneck to be there, because this has happened. And then it wrote out a story and I go, oh, that's ghastly. So I type in some stuff. Actually, no, that's not quite what I meant. Da 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 da. And it writes something and it invents a new character. I go, oh, okay. That's actually quite good. I maybe rename the character name. But then I would pop in and I would take it and I would go in and with my own fingertips, I would go in and I would edit and edit and edit until I go, okay, that's good enough. And then I'd go, well, what happens next in the story? And I'd figure that out. And then I'd paste in my second lesson into ChatGPT. I'd paste both lessons in and say, this is what I got so far. The next bit I want is for the story to do this. And then it would spit out something. And then I repeated and repeated and repeated. So that was to get an email course, that eventually, the main purpose of that was selfish in that I wanted to get something that I could actually, I got people on the course and I wrote it 2 or 3 days ahead because I wanted to get my own momentum for writing up. And I got to the end of it, go, wow, that's really good. But as I was doing that, people were giving me feedback about the content and I was writing that back in. So you see here, I'm using ChatGTP to do some stuff. But most of it's me toing and froing with it. And then once I've done that, I go, okay, I've got an email course. And then just this one day, I just thought, that's a book. That would be so much, it will hit more people and help more people if I can pop it on Amazon. So I took all the lessons, put it into, I think I probably swapped a Claude just to see what it was like. And it ran through and it just made suggestions on how I could change it. And then we just kept. And all of the suggestions I would keep in a master document, and it would suggest something, and then I'd go and cut and paste if I liked it and put it in, and then eventually I'd start a new chat and put the current state of the document in there, and I would rework and rework and rework. So now most people when they're doing this aren't writing a book, but this is why you have to like start fresh, put it in, and then one thing that's really useful is I went in and I said, actually, I want to write this. It's got to have a detective theme. And I've tried to write the story, but I'm like the master detective. What do you reckon I should do to this, Claude? And it said, why don't we, how about I rewrite the first chapter, And I write an introduction from you, and I write it like a detective. And it wrote it like a detective, and I cringed because it was so cliched. I thought,
Too
no,
much.
it was just too much. And I said, can you dial it back quite a lot? So, and I said, here's the Bottleneck Rules, the book that you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make it like that book? Can you read that? Tell me how I write, but just write it with a bit of detective-y stuff in it. And so it went through, and it just helped me just rewrite it with this kind of me as detective, not Sam Spade,
yeah.
Not Columbo, but me as detective. And I read it and go, wow, that's definitely not how I would normally write, but it's totally right for a book about a bottleneck detective. And then it went through and said, why don't we add in some detective rules? And I go, oh, that's a really good idea. So it started, as it went through, it started inventing that would add in a detective rule. And I'd look at them and go, some of them are, wow, that's really clever. I never thought of that. And some of them are, oh my goodness, that's like a greeting card cliche. So I would take some of the ideas and I would add them in. And then I would, the other ones, I would just completely discard them. And then the last bit I'll tell you about the book that was most useful is I had one chapter at the end of the Bottleneck Detective, which was me kind of writing a wrap-up letter. And it's funny, actually, you mentioned Billy Broas and his book.
Mm-hmm.
I paid to go on a couple of Billy's marketing messaging cohorts. And I also paid for quite a lot of consulting with him as well. And at the end of one of his cohorts, he sent out a letter to people saying, hey, this is a wrap-up of the course, and here are the lessons that I thought you might have missed as you went along to the high-level stuff. I wish you luck. And it was, and you get this unexpected email at the end of the course. You go, wow, that's just really lovely. It's like wisdom, you know, just arrived in my email box. And so I took that and I said, hey, look, I've written this book, and you've got the whole book there. And I've also written this conclusion chapter, and it just doesn't actually feel it feels kind of it's very flat, and it's you know, it's too much like a textbook. And can I just show you this thing, and then can you help me rewrite it so it's kind of in the same sort of sense as this note that Billy wrote? And so there's no content. It was just read through the email that he had written to us, and it just rewrote mine, so it was the same idea as I already had, but it wrote it in this, hey look, here's a letter from the Bottleneck master detective wishing you luck. And I looked and go, that's really good. And I come back a few days later and I looked at it again and I go, it's still not quite me. And I said, look, really, I just want to write, can you rewrite this thing here as if you're the Bottleneck detective, but I want you to rewrite it as if it's actually coming from, say, almost like a father whose son or daughter is leaving home, which I've got here. You know, it's a lovely, it's a gift I want to give you as a wise parent who wishes you luck.
Mm-hmm.
And we toed and froed on that, and it came out with a voice, and I go, this is the only bit in the whole book where I thought, I don't think I actually could have the capability to write something like that myself, but working with ChatGPT, I come up and I read that bit and I go, it's probably the least informative book of the bit of the whole book, but it's the bit I'm most proud of. But it's the bit that I probably couldn't have written by myself.
Oh, that's so interesting. So what I am hearing is you worked with ChatGPT and Claude both almost as if they were ghostwriters that you hired. Like there's this back and forth conversation happening.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a good way of doing it. But rather than them being in charge, there's a lot of that there, but a lot of ghostwriters will take it, you know, there'll be developmental editing kind of stuff as well. I use them more. There was a lot of to and froing, but I was in charge as the author. I knew what the book was about. I knew the process, so they helped me write bits and pieces. But then it did. It gave me some really, you know, why don't you put in these detective rules? And I go, what a good idea. And then it would write things, and it would. But then I go, so it was actually, it really was a partnership. but I was felt like I was always in charge. Whereas the ghostwriter might do a lot of interviewing, come back and go, here you go, here's your book.
Here's
it
your
was
book.
Much
Yeah.
more
Yeah.
To and fro.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. So let me ask you this. I know there was some I don't want to say heated debate on the forum, but you know, people are opinionated about this kind of thing.
Indeed.
As someone who has used AI for a large portion of what was written, I mean, obviously the ideas were yours and the final product is yours. What do you feel is your responsibility for, like, including ChatGPT and Claude as co-writers on the finished product? Do you feel responsible for letting the readers know that this content was created with AI?
I have thought a lot about that, and I thought I decided to let the reviews speak for themselves, and the feedback I got speak for itself. But I've been public about writing it, so people on my email list know that I've said, "Hey, look, I wrote this," and they will, of course, be some of the ones that the most likely ones to actually read it first. And I've sent copies to some of the people on the Mac power users list and said, "Hey, look," and they've come and said that it never would have occurred to me if you hadn't said that it was actually written with AI. Certainly, it's certainly not written by AI. You know, like I said, I didn't go in and go, "Hey, write me a book about a bottleneck detective." There were, I wouldn't say hundreds of hours. I guess there's probably maybe 80 hours worth of effort gone into that book of actual solid writing. There's been many, many decades of thinking gone into get to that point. But I decided that I wasn't going to put a warning like this may contain cashew nuts on the front of it, because I thought that AI is tainted. And I would be doing people a disservice if they didn't read it, because they go, "Oh, it's written by AI." And I imagine in there's a bit when you upload it to Amazon where it says, "Hey, look, was any AI used in this?" And I've just gone, "Yep, extensively used with extensive human personal editing on it." And it's got those options in there. And I imagine that at some stage they may or may not put that in their little product description.
I would imagine,
Yeah, I got this funny feeling that if I had put a warning on that, it would be kind of like it would have done a disservice to the effort I put in. And I also actually genuinely believe that the book is far better for two reasons. It's far better because I work with AI than if I hadn't. So it would taint it if I put it on the book on Amazon. And there are so many people who are writing poor quality books out there on Amazon using this stuff anyway. I don't want to be classed in that. So there's two reasons why I think it's better. The first is that I suspect it, given I struggle to sit and type, but actually the physical pain of doing that, past books have come back to haunt me. So being able to actually go for a drive sometimes and talk to ChatGPT and talk through some of the ideas and then come back, that's been a magnificent way of having a very clever person to chat to that's not real. Then I come back and then I'll work on the book. So I think the book's actually much richer for having had a really two or three different partners that I can work with to come up to enhance the ideas, or take a metaphor that I've come up with, enhance it, or for it to tell me to take out a really bad dad joke that I thought was funny that ChatGTP said it wouldn't. So if you take two things, this is almost like a binary thing. One is that the first thing is that it's actually the quality of the book I think is better. The second is that I don't know if I would have put in, say, 200 to 300 hours into writing that book if compared to putting in, say, 50 to 80 hours. I just don't think I would have. So the choice was not a handwritten book, a totally manually written book like all my previous stuff, or it was just like I just wouldn't have written it because it would have caused me too much physical pain and cost me just far too much time. So I think it's 10x'd, honestly, 10x'd my productivity as a writer, and I think the quality's gone up too.
Excellent. So, having read two of your books, I know you said you have six published, I think. Having read two of them, I would not have known that The Bottleneck Detective was written using AI. I don't want to say it was written by AI because clearly it was not. It was written by you. I would not have known that AI assisted you with it. When I compare that book to the previous book, to The Bottleneck Rules, I could not have noticed the difference. I think AI writing sometimes leaves big clues behind.
It does.
Like sometimes it's really easy to spot, like, oh, this is,
Oh, cringe, cringe. You
yeah, it
didn't post
sounds,
that. Yeah,
yeah,
chop off.
sometimes it sounds like it was written by, a 16-year-old writing an essay for school,
Yes.
right? With that, five paragraphs, three sentences per paragraph, and the kind of really
Totally.
dry kind of stuff. That's a lot of times what AI sounds like. There's no indication in this book that it was written even in part by AI. But I also think you're right. I think if you did put that disclaimer, there are certain people in the world, myself included, who would look at that and say, I'm not going to spend my time on it. And my experience, my level of knowledge would be worse for that, because then I would not have gotten to read the book. And that would have
Isn't it
been
a shame, though,
unfortunate.
that because there's this whole world of people out there who whose profession is to write poor quality, well, not poor quality, average, below average, lot that quantity rather than quality. So
Correct.
it
Yes.
taints everything, and that's why on the Mac Power users and with my email list, and also on LinkedIn, I have said, hey, I'm writing with this, and I think it will be bad for the world if we let all of those mass-produced, highly—it's like the highly processed food kind of equivalent of writing. If we let that taint the people who are craftspeople, who the equivalent of chefs, if you want to think about the highly processed food. So I've gone out, and so that's partly why I was really delighted that you contacted me, because I don't think there will be more rubbish out there, but this gives two lots of people a chance to do better. One is like me. I know I'm a really good writer, and I know I spent 25 years getting to the point where I can write stuff that's really good, and I think it's making me far more productive, and I think it's made my writing better. And the other is the people who maybe can't write as well. So actually, I've got like a little bit of a dichotomy. I'm not actually a very good writer, but I'm a very good writer at the same time. I wouldn't pass English tests for spelling and grammar and all of that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of people who find writing really, really difficult. And
Yes.
this is going to make it easy. And the bit actually, Cindy, that I never pointed out is that so much of this stuff was me actually lying back on the couch, reading through stuff and then just talking. Okay, this is really good. I go into the voice mode, not the advanced chat one, just I just go through and I say, hey, look, I'm looking at that and I like this. And I'd love to bounce off that chapter, which I've just uploaded. And I would like you to maybe add, to just help me come up with a draft for something that takes the ideas I've got there, but put a contrarian point of view on it. Just say the opposite. And then can you just spit that out, and then I'll use that to edit it. Thanks. And then I push the button, and a moment later we'll come back and I go, it's just so helpful. It just saved me 2 or 3 hours worth of typing.
Right.
And even if it's rubbish, I might have typed equally rubbish stuff and then discarded it and wasted 2 or 3 hours. So that's just really, really, really helpful. The voice bit, for 20 something years, I've been buying and not using voice dictation software because it's always overpromised and underdelivered. This stuff actually works really, really well. So imagine if I didn't have any hands here. I'm being not facetious. I'm just, and I couldn't type. I can now talk to this, and it will then take my, 4 or 5 minute, sometimes 10 minute conversations with it, and it will sum it up, and it will do, and I'll go, "That's what I was trying to say." And then I can go back and I can ask it to change the tone of it or to do a shorter version of it, and then I'll pop in and then I'll go through and I'll edit it and I'll put my dad jokes in, and I'll take the and then I'll look at it and go, once I've rewritten something, and I'll pop it back and say, "Hey, look, did I read this, and it just feels like active voice. Please rewrite an active voice." And it will go through, and suddenly the whole thing comes out, and you go, "Wow, why wouldn't it always write an active voice?" And so it's really, really good like that. Just the, and that's probably more effort for than a lot of people would want to do to write something. But then it's my reputation and my legacy. Could you imagine if I put that book out and instead of 5 stars, it was getting 2 stars? I couldn't live with that.
For sure. So what, in the industry that I am in, it is unfortunate, and this is, kind of a stance that I take, but it is unfortunate in this industry, in the online business industry, that there's always this need or this want or this push to find the easy button. Do this the easiest, the fastest way, no effort, passive income, all of those things, right? And when tools like ChatGPT and Claude and Perplexity came along, there is a group of people in this industry who are teaching others that you don't have to do any work. All you have to do is upload the right prompt, and ChatGPT will do all of the writing for you. And that's when I kind of stand up and go, wait a minute. This is not how you build a business. This is not how you write a book. This is not how you write a blog. But that's not what I'm hearing from you. I hear you put 80 hours of work into this.
I'm not sure what your language rating is, but so I'm not going to say what I was thinking. But I worked an awful lot to do this. But I swear, actually, I cannot prove it, but I'm pretty sure that I don't think the quality's up on my writing. And I've got like I've sold thousands of copies of books, and they all get. Actually, my very first book that came out, the big book, was a business novel, and I've had people e email me back, and they said, "I cried at the end of it," which is a business novel, and people and
That's pretty
I,
impressive.
yeah, and it's not because they felt like they wasted their time, but I like I've read this 5 times, sort of thing. One guy emailed me a wee while ago, said, "I read this, listen to the audiobook of this every year." As a reminder, and sometimes I cry at the end of it. So I've gone through this thing where I now know how to write stuff that is totally, totally authentically me. But now I think I can, provided I write short books, which I think is far better for ChatGPT. I wouldn't write a long book ever again. But if I can write 2 or 3 books a year that make people's lives genuinely better, if I can make people cry more often, that would be actually that would be ridiculous. But
All
if I
right.
can write stuff
Clark's
that people
goal is to
read,
make people cry,
make
apparently.
people cry more often. But you know this, when I listened to your podcast before we talked, I went back and I've listened to three of the more recent ones. And you can tell with that the there's real quality and care, and you're trying to make the world a better place. I can tell that you're marketing and you're doing all of that stuff, but it's authentic, it's real, it's useful, and for You might find it easier to sit down and just maybe, I don't know how you prep it. I won't, if you find it, you may find it easier to sit down and just stick with the way that you do your podcasts. For me, I might sit down and go now, and I never would have before. I might sit down and go, actually, I want to do a podcast, or I want to write a an essay about this idea. And so now I'll switch to ChatGPT and I'll, or Claude, actually, I think is sometimes better at the moment. And I'll say, actually, can I give you an example
Yeah,
that
please.
I think this one was really blew my mind. So the stuff that is in Billy Broas's book is about using his marketing approach, which is absolutely brilliant, and everyone should read that book and then go hire him to help think about how to be a marketer. But when we the stuff that I worked through him was with me working with leaders who were bottlenecks. You know, like you said earlier on, you look in the mirror and go, "Wow, I'm the bottleneck." And so many leaders are. And I've gone through one of my clients. I grew her from, well, together we worked together, and she grew from having 30 staff to 300 over the last 3 years or so. And can you imagine the growth that she had to go through, and a whole team had to go through? And now she swears that she's better as a leader of 300 than she was of 30. And I
Oh,
was thinking,
wow.
I want to explain this with a, you know, with a metaphor, because that's as a writer, that's, you know, one of the things I just use all the time. And I'm thinking, a snake. Snakes grow that. I don't know if you know snakes. They as they grow bigger, they have to shed their skin. Then they'll grow into the next size and the next size and the next size. Well, that's quite a good metaphor, but it's not like she actually, her team got bigger, but it just didn't kind of feel right. No one wants to be compared with a snake. So I went into ChatGPT and we had maybe an hour and a half conversation where I said, "Hey, look, I'm looking for a metaphor. I described all of this." And then I said, "Can you suggest one?" I said, "How about a butterfly to chrysalis?" And I go, "No, vomit. That's,
Cliche, super
yeah."
cliche.
And we kept going, and then it said, "How about a hermit crab?" And I go, "What? A hermit crab? They move from shell to shell, and as they move from this shell, they go out, and they actually have to be very brave and move up to the next size shell.
Yeah,
And when they
naked.
get there,
You have to
suddenly you
move
look around,
naked.
then they're naked. Yeah, they go out naked, and everyone looks away in the sea, and then they move up and they get to this new shell, and then they've got to grow into that shell." But they've also actually, if you think about it a little bit more imaginatively, and if it's as a metaphor, you've also got to abandon the stuff, a lot of the stuff that you had that was perfect for the previous shell. You've also got to acquire new stuff that fits in the new shell. And then as you're doing that, you've also got to be on the lookout for what the next shell is going to be like. And so ChatGPT came up with this, and I ended up running a sort of effective short training things for a whole lot of people that worked in this company, because they had grown massively during this time. But because that metaphor of the hermit crab, as people grow, they have to abandon stuff, move in, get new stuff. So many people were going through that, and they just loved the metaphor, because it was just really it was just easy for them to imagine. It was. But that came, I would not have come up with that myself, because I didn't know really that much about hermit crabs. But with ChatGPT and I, we went through, and we just had a really lovely little chat. It suggested that, it suggested a lot of things, but that one there, I go, "Oh, that's it." And so that kind of use, and you know, I could say, "Hey, spit out an article based on that," or I could not. I could just, like in that case, I just turned it into a keynote presentation and just talked through myself. But the ideation and the spark came from the two of us working together, and neither of us would have come up with it by ourselves.
I love that. I love how you use it as a tool, but it's not the only tool in your
No.
toolbox. It's which is a lot of times the way we hear about it being used as the only tool in the toolbox. Just do this one thing and be successful, you know.
And it's funny, the ones that we're normally hearing it from, I did subscribe to one Substack that was about writing with AI. And I thought, actually, I'd love to do this. And it was kind of interesting. But they had basically, they're very cleverly selling information that people want. But I don't think any of it would actually for me. It didn't train. It seemed like it would work really well for people who want to do quantity, and it would actually lift the quality up. So it was actually it was a good stuff that they put out. But again, it was the quantity that it was all of it was starting with dollar signs and easiness. And you said the word easy before. That the people that want the easy way of doing stuff. And it certainly can do some heavy lifting for us, but at the end of the day, it just don't, we could if we wanted to get whole lots of chat GTPs and Claudes and have them one day talking to each other, and they could be like that start that war games
That's
thing where they play tic-tac-toe,
terrifying.
isn't it? And they
That's a
could be
terrifying
producing
thought.
content and consuming it,
Yes.
yeah.
And then producing more of it. Yeah, that's just a terrifying thought.
Maybe that's how the world ends, Cindy.
Well, you know, I've seen Terminator. I'm pretty sure that is how the world ends.
I think so. Yeah.
But not today.
Not today. Got a
Not
few more
today.
years left in this.
We're not there yet. Clark, this has been fascinating hearing your process and reading through your books. I truly, truly enjoyed both books that I read. I've enjoyed getting to know you better.
Thank you.
Where can people find your books?
Right. Well, they can. So there's one other Clark Ching in the world,
Oh,
and
okay.
he's a
With an E,
dentist. And
Clark with an E?
actually, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I've never
Because
met him, but
you're Clark with an E.
I'm Clark E.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. And he's a dentist. And he's in Canada. And way back, our ancestors would have left Cornwall and Devon. And some went to Canada and some went to New Zealand. So we are related, but Clark Ching is a very distinctive surname. So if people want to find me, clarkching.com. If anyone that's listening would actually like a copy of either of those books, I make my money from consulting, and I try to be as generous as I possibly can with giving away the books and actually making them useful. So if anyone would like a copy, they can go to Amazon if they like, but just find me on LinkedIn. Or just email me at clark@clarkching.com, and I'd be very happy to send a free PDF of any of the books.
That is very generous. They are well worth reading. They're quick reads. I think it took me 45 minutes to read The Bottleneck Detective, and it was every bit as entertaining as any movie I had ever seen. So well worth the time to
Thank
invest
you.
in reading them, and well worth looking at them, even, you know, from a standpoint of knowing that this was written in partnership with ChatGPT and Claude, and looking at how the book is put together, and then, you know, kind of listening back to this interview about the steps that you took. I think it's going to be very informative for people. I'm a big fan of reverse engineering things, you
Yeah,
know,
that's a really good idea,
looking
actually.
at how someone else is doing something and figuring it out rather than taking a class, or even though I sell courses, whatever. But you know, I think reverse engineering is one of the best ways to learn anything. So even reading the books from that point of view is going to be beneficial, I think, to people. Is there anything else you want people to know about you? Anything else you
I've got a.
anything I
Can
didn't
we go back?
ask?
Can we go back to you, Cindy? You were
Sure.
standing looking at the mirror,
Yeah,
going,
as the
"Whoa, I'm the
bottleneck in
bottleneck."
my business, yes, we are all, and this is for everybody that I work with. I work with solopreneurs. We are all the bottleneck.
Well, totally. So what you've got to do is, if you were to read my stuff and you go, "The bottleneck," what that means is that your business moves at the speed of you. So I'm a consultant, so I'm effectively a solo consultant, and I'm exactly the same. And so much of what we want to do is just we try and do it all of ourselves, and that's why I think you're big on setting up systems, which is really good. So you offload so much of your stuff off of your brain, so that you can focus on the stuff that you're really, really, really good at. And that's just the general pattern. We shouldn't feel bad about being the bottleneck. It's just inevitable. But if you can hire an assistant to do some stuff, if you can hire an assistant and give them ChatGTP, maybe here's a really crazy example, and you want to write content. Let's say you went into ChatGTP and you go, "I want to write something about this." Give it to your assistant, ask them to go off and research some stuff, and produce using ChatGTP a draft article. So that could be like an hour and a half worth of work for an assistant. That you come back and you look at it and you go, "Oh, that's terrible. Get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that. Move that from there up to there." And then suddenly you would just do that, just like a school teacher would with a red pen, pop it back to your assistant and say, "Hey, look, could you maybe just edit this stuff out and then pass it back to me again?" And now we've got this weird situation that you're working with someone who cannot obviously write like you. But you're working off a draft that's actually reasonably good quality, but it just doesn't feel like you. And then you can do the editing. You came up with the idea. You then got a draft that's came from other places, but you go, "Oh, that's terrible. Slash, 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 move that around." You go, "Actually, that's not bad." And then you might pass it through something like Grammarly to perhaps to get that feedback, which is AI again. You might even, if you were brave enough, you might even think of running the spell checker on it, which is probably, we don't call it AI, but it was it's the most rudimentary form of something like AI. It's all other people's work, you know, over many centuries.
They call it
So you
AI
might.
now because AI is the buzzword, but it's been AI for a decade.
Actually, could you imagine if they did invent spell checkers now? It would be AI spell checking. You did right. So just think that there's lots of things that you can do. And I'm really not trying to push the AI thing because what I'm trying to, I think the reason why I decided I would be vocal about it is that I think it's actually made a huge difference to me. I think it make a huge difference to a lot of people. But just don't use it to produce documents full of smiling pile of poop emojis, or metaphorically produce something that you feel proud of, and is actually useful, and other people can take your ideas and use them. That's one of the most generous things that a clever solopreneur can do, is actually share their expertise in a way that other people can read it. And AI just makes that easier. But you can also go the evil way, and just produce piles of poop,
Mediocre stuff.
not good for anyone. Anyway, I'm off my I'll hop up top down off my soapbox now.
Hey, you are welcome to hop on your soapbox on my podcast any day. I'll tell you that.
Excellent.
So, thank you so much for joining me. I will put links to your website, to your Amazon, to your LinkedIn, all in the show notes in case people want to get in touch or if they want to read a copy of The Bottleneck Rules or The Bottleneck Detective, both of which I highly recommend, even if you're not in, manufacturing or
Especially if you're not.
in those businesses where Clark is a consultant and earning his keep. I still think there's a lot to be learned from those books as a solopreneur, even if it's just a different way of looking at where the bottlenecks are.
Cool. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you so much, Clark. Really appreciate you. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you. Likewise.
If you like what you hear on the Tiny Course Empire podcast, you're going to love all of the courses and workshops and support you'll find inside Six Figure Systems. That's my monthly program where we dig into online marketing for regular people like you and me. We don't do big launches, we don't have the big headaches, and we don't have the big expenses that come with them. Instead, we focus on creating repeatable, sustainable systems that continue to grow over time and that don't suck up all of our energy or require a 10-person team to manage. You can come see what we're all about at sixfiguresystems.com, and I'll see you on the inside.